Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a sign of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk.
Welcome to hour two of the show. We talked about our interns earlier when we had our a little issue with the phones, but that all worked out. If you want to call in and talk to the nervous intern as he gets you on the show, 713-780-3776. But Lance is still here. When he's not bothering people, he'll have a conversation with people that's not as annoying as the ones he has with me. So I'm glad that you guys get to, not you guys listening, but the people out there get it, see a different Lance. He's generally just trolling me throughout the day. But he came out to talk to one of the interns, and the intern made this statement. You know the guy from Trill Burgers, in reference to Bun B. And Sean and I were just, Sean relayed that conversation to me, and we just started shaking our heads. He's not the guy from Trill Burgers. The only reason Trill Burgers exists is because he's a legendary rapper. UGK. Man,
these kids don't know.
They don't know. And look, now we're the old guys. Well, I'm older than you, so I'm the even older guy. But now we're in that mode where you uninformed kids. You don't know anything. You don't know anything about anything. He's not the Trill Burger guy. Crazy. And we're trying to think of other comparisons.
I was trying to think of another thing. I honestly cannot. Oh, what's the hold on. Just keeping it with rappers, is it Spire? Is that the 50 Cent drink?
See the vitamin water guy?
Even then, I don't think they would know.
Yeah, they wouldn't even know that.
He's not the face of vitamin water.
Yeah, no, he's not. I'm trying to think of a comparison that would make us shake our heads even more. For us, you know, there are people out there who are maybe older than us, who would say something similar and go, what, that person? But yeah, he's the rapper, Bun B, who happens to have diversified his portfolio, and now he's got a burger place.
From the Spire Cognac? No, yeah, 50 Cent?
Oh, yeah, that guy, Get Rich or Die Trying, that guy? That's who you're talking about? Man, I guess it's a passage of time, Sean. It happens to everybody.
Even like... I mean, we're both of the age where we didn't see Bill Walton ever play. Even then, we know he's a basketball player.
He's aware not the that he's wacky play-by or analyst guy. We know he's more than that. Because, once again, the only reason he's a wacky analyst is because he was a great basketball player.
Like one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
These kids.
It is what it is, man.
It's going to be a long summer.
Joe was right when he did that little hand motion.
When we asked his scouting report was ahead of
dead
his
on. He's a great evaluator of talent, Joe George, at least intern talent. So our interns are getting acclimated to the place here. And welcome. We'll mock you quite a bit if we deem it necessary.
You'll be part of the show.
Yes.
That's the positive.
We haven't mentioned your name because I don't know it.
Ryan.
So I know,
although I don't know if he wants his name on that.
Well, we don't give him. He's Ryan from wherever, as opposed to Christina from Webster. When we were talking about Chipotle earlier, we know Charlie. We know Ryan. There are a couple of other guys roaming around that may not be a part of this show, but will be a part of the Killer Bees and Gallant and George. I mentioned before the break that PFF has ranked the rosters, and it's a good time for it. There won't be any major acquisitions. Free agency in that regard is over. I mean, there's still people, guys floating around, maybe a guard here or a corner. Well, we got a couple. Steven Nelson, one of the Milk Dud Man comment, and Xavier Howard are still out there. So there are a couple of big names still out there, but for the most part, all the rosters are kind of set. And if you are a fan of these teams, you just hope a major injury doesn't occur so you can at least get to the season with your roster intact. If you had to guess, Sean, who PFF thinks the best roster in football is, what team would you choose?
San Francisco.
You are correct. They are number one. They consider their biggest weakness pass protection and their biggest strength offensive playmakers. And you just start listing the names and you get it. Now, are they happy playmakers? Are Debo and Brandon Ayuk looking at the Jalen Waddle contract and going, "Hey, look at me. Where's mine?"
I think they are.
They probably are. If we know wide receivers, they probably are. So they may not be happy offensive playmakers, but that is the strength of the team. Who do you think is the best roster in the AFC, according to PFF?
Best roster in the AFC? Ooh, that's tough. It's not the Chiefs.
It is the Chiefs.
Oh, it is the Chiefs.
Which is surprising, wow, considering when you look at them. Now,
I guess the defense is
their defense is really good. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes is doing a lot of work, carrying a lot of water for that offense. Yeah. And the O-line is good, too.
Okay, so, that makes some sense.
You just think of offensive playmakers because that's a lot of the focus, and you think there's just Kelce, and Pacheco's fine. Yeah. I don't think he's a great back. He's fine. And
Rashee Rice,
we expect to be unavailable for a couple games. We expect. You never know.
People forget he's good when he's not terrorizing the community.
Yeah, and Isaiah Worthy. Zay Worthy.
Disrespect.
That's on me.
I'm writing that down.
Oh, yeah. Let him know the disrespect and see if he responds.
That and the 10 guys that got drafted above A.D. Mitchell.
Yeah, all those guys disrespecting. We're just disrespecting Texas wide receivers.
Left and right.
Zay Worthy is there, has a hamstring issue, but, you know, he's a quick twitch guy, so you're a little concerned, but should get over it.
He's 3 months to get over
it. Yeah, he's like, you know what? I got an injury. It's better than showing up to this facility. Can I do my rehab from home?
I'll stand on the sideline wearing a bucket hat instead.
I'd rather do that than walk into that facility.
That ugly ass.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. And we know he came from the University of Texas, where no expense was spared. Now he's playing for Kansas City. Hey, you win, probably doesn't matter. But it clearly hasn't mattered to the Chiefs. They went on to win a 3 out of 4, but. Hey, maybe not have wooden locker rooms at this point. Are you in high school still?
Where are the Texans rank on that?
They are 7th. Okay. I'm going to read off the rest of the teams because the Chiefs are 2nd. So the 49ers and Chiefs, the 2 Super Bowl combatants, are 1st and 2nd in the roster rankings. And I'm going to start to read off the rest of the teams and you see if you disagree with someone as far as being ahead of the Texans.
Okay.
They go with the Eagles at 3. The Jets at 4.
When I was thinking of AFC teams, I was thinking maybe the Jets, but I thought that was crazy. So I can't say I disagree, but it's wild
to think. And you just see their hobbling quarterback running around in pictures and video yesterday. Now they're saying it's because he has blisters on his feet. Of course,
there's a pebble in a shoe. All right, this is a non-story.
A lot of the people suggest, ooh, you don't look good on that ACL, but the reporting is blisters for Aaron Rodgers. That's why he looked like that on dropbacks and running around. Why he had to pause and take off his shoe and stuff.
Been like running marathons, like what?
I don't know why he has blisters. Hey,
put on some shoes.
Fit the shoes better. What are you doing?
I guarantee you, it is a barefoot related blister. He was barefoot someplace he shouldn't have been
with ayahuasca in his system.
I didn't say that.
I said it. With my chest. I said he had ayahuasca in his system. I don't think he would. I don't think that's never happened before for Aaron Rodgers.
You know, it's Memorial Day weekend. Probably, you know, a beach somewhere. Just a little blister issue because he forgot his flip flops. I don't know.
I don't know why I always assume those people and hygiene don't go together. You know, ayahuasca.
I think I know.
You're out there with nature. You just assume. Showers are optional. A bath is soap and a bath are optional. We're doing the good stuff.
We're just vomiting all over ourselves on ayahuasca.
I just assume there's just a stench there that no one wants to be a part of.
Yeah.
Unless you're on that particular drug. So the Jets are 4th. The biggest concern for the Jets or at least the X factor would be Aaron Rodgers, and they say the offensive line is a big weakness. So the health of your quarterback is an X factor, and your offensive line is a big weakness. That's a good way to build a roster.
I think that's probably why they're not going to get picked to be in the AFC Championship game, despite having the second best roster.
Well, and now they added guys, Tyron Smith from the Cowboys, who was injured certainly late in his time there. They drafted Olufoshanu, so they tried to address it, but that is the biggest weakness. Number five on the list is the Ravens. We know a team the Texans had big issues with last year.
Yeah, Ravens should be ahead of the Jets,
yes.
But both. Jets, let's see what other teams, because the Jets being ahead of the Texans a little, I would put them in the same, like, category, but.
So the only team left, we just went through the top five. The only team left at number six are the Lions. The Lions are the sixth best roster, according to PFF, in the NFL. And their biggest strength is their offense.
I think, yeah.
And outside corner. Oh, that sounds familiar. Is their biggest weakness. That sounds familiar. What other team might have that issue?
Hey, number seven.
Yeah.
I forgot about the Lions, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lions should be higher on the list. Should be higher than
the Jets.
Maybe. Probably not the Eagles, but it's close.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of last year, certainly a little recency bias considering how the Eagles flamed out. But the roster is good. They have an issue at corner outside of Darius Slay. They're older in the secondary. That's why they drafted Quinion Minshew and Connor Zajin. So they've tried to improve and get younger there. They're just unproven, but they've added talent there. But the Lions, we saw them last year. They were a couple of self-inflicted wounds away from making the Super Bowl. They had a lead against the 49ers.
Yeah.
In the NFC title game. So putting them there at six, you might even think it's a little disrespectful to the Lions.
And they're not a team like how the Niners can be number one and number two is the Chiefs, even though we saw them play and we saw who won. There are these teams that you look at, like the Chiefs are getting lifted up by their quarterback.
Yeah.
This is like a holistic look at their team. This is the entire team. And then when it actually comes down to a game, you're like, well, if it's close, give me the team with the best quarterback.
Yeah.
And so like a team like the Lions, they're not getting that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
and last year, the Jets got the opposite of that, where they had an absolute zero at quarterback. Actually, they had a negative at quarterback.
Yeah, it wasn't neutral, yeah.
Zero was nice with Zach Wilson for the majority of the year. So, yeah. It is interesting where the Texans are seventh, but then you add in C.J. Stroud. I mean, we talked about the Tampa Bay game last year, where it's like, well, if they have a quarterback that can do that. Like seventh seems like it's a little low, but it's not taking in account the quarterback.
Sure, and you look at some of the other teams ahead of them, as we mentioned, the Ravens. Do you think Lamar Jackson can be what C.J. Stroud was in that Tampa game? Lamar Jackson does it a different way, but he can certainly affect the game and raise the level of his roster. Aaron Rodgers, I'm not sure. We'll find out about him going forward with himself. And we've talked about Jared Goff and what he might be. We don't think he's one of those guys. Jalen Hurts was really good before last year. There was a fall off there. Maybe we just attribute it to the bad coordinator. And now with Kellen Moore there, we'll see the Jalen Hurts we saw the previous couple of years before then, at least specifically in 2022. The Texans' biggest weakness is not outside corner, according to PFF. It is their offensive line. They question everybody pretty much outside of Laremy Tunsil and Shaq Mason. So even the likes of I'm right tackle only Titus Howard isn't above people saying maybe he's not long for that job because they say a rookie to watch is Blake Fisher. They think there's a chance Blake Fisher plays and helps this team.
I would not put offensive line as the weakness. I'd put defensive backfield. I would say that not just outside corner, but also safety.
Yeah, we've talked. Yeah, this show has talked about that. Yeah, I think
O-line. I'm cool with it. Like
we line up as far as how we think in the same way. The outside cornerback, the safety, the both safety positions, and that second corner. Our problems, and I think will be a problem that we're going to ask why the Texans didn't address it with better players. Now they drafted a safety. They've spread Not a lot of money. They gave Okuda enough to let you know he's going to be on the roster. So they went and got a couple guys who had who were first-round picks. We know D'Amico likes C.J. Henderson and Jeff Okuda, but I think at some point we're going to ask, how come you didn't sign Xavien Howard or go after another corner in a stronger fashion, because this is the problem. But offensive line, I don't think it's great. You know, PFF people disagree with their numbers as far as offensive line play. They're leaning into their numbers and telling us that the Texans' offensive line will be a problem when Shaq Mason and Laremy Tunsil are excluded from the conversation. So just one publication's thoughts. But the Texans, the seventh best roster in all of football, according to them, with the Bengals at 8, the Cowboys at 9, and then the Bills at 10. So that's your top 10. The Texans firmly in the top 10, and that means things go their way. Injury luck happens. You're looking at a potential Super Bowl contender. Certainly a lot of variables come into play for that to happen. We will come back and we'll hear some sound from the SEC. And specifically Texas, because the Texas Longhorns and the Oklahoma Sooners are embarking on their first year in the SEC. Chris Del Conte jumped right into the deep end, talking about why the Texas-Oklahoma rivalry might mean more than the other rivalries in the SEC. You can imagine the reaction from SEC people. It happened on the Paul Feinbaum show, and he said, oh, thanks, Chris. This is perfect for me. So we'll hear from Chris Del Conte when we come back.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. The Longhorns and the Sooners are in the SEC, which means they are going to get even more attention than they've gotten in the Big 12. Yes, big name schools, blue bloods, but we all know it just means more, Sean, to be in the SEC. You'll get more attention. In fact, we've already getting some of the scheduling out there as far as games, and the Longhorns and the Sooners will play a 2:30 game on ABC. That has traditionally been a 11 a.m. game on Fox. Now that they're in the SEC is taking over ESPN and ABC are taking over the 2:30 game that's always the biggest game of the week for the SEC, and Oklahoma and Texas will fill that slot. At least, I think the game's October 12th, will fill that slot this year. So if you're looking for SEC football and their big game of the weekend, don't no longer look at CBS. I'm sure there'll be some Big Ten game you might not care about going forward. You got to find that game on the ESPN family of networks.
I didn't even consider how funny that's going to be. I hope there's like a week four, like Florida versus Tennessee, and they're just like, oh yeah, it's at 2:30, so it's got to be on CBS. And it's like Rutgers and Iowa, and
like, hey,
these Tennessee Vol fans, their eyeballs just fall out of their head.
They've completely forgotten what the new deal is.
What the hell is this?
Why am I watching Purdue football? I didn't even know they played football in Indiana. If you ask the majority of the SEC, do you think they could tell you where Notre Dame University is located?
Like on a map?
Yeah, like what state it's in.
I don't know. It would be a lower percentage than
you would think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd want to say over 50, but I don't know.
I think you're overestimating.
I think I am too. Yeah. There's also some geography questions that get lumped in with that.
I was going with they just think about themselves. You're questioning their intelligence. Sean just shrugged his shoulders. I mean, what do you want me to do?
I mean, I can pull up the I can pull up the stats. They keep track of these.
It's not great. But before we get to Chris Del Conte, I always say, hey, if you're calling in, I'm not going to make you wait. You're spending the time to call this show. We'll talk to you. Is that Lil T? He wants to talk with the Astros?
Yeah, the hashtag the people stand with real. The Astros suck right now. Also, what do you think about Stacey Dash trending towards doing stuff on the internet?
Yes, Ryan. I'm going to put that
Lil T. That was a little T.
Who's that supposed to be, though?
I don't know, but it's a good head fake.
And... Yeah. No, I knew who it was, but I just didn't know who that was. Even when I saw the name Lil T, I knew who it was. I just didn't know who. He's normally referencing something that happened on the previous show or on one of our shows, but I don't know what that reference is. He'll have to call back. Not today. Tomorrow. You can call back tomorrow and alert us to what that's supposed to be. She's 57 years old, which I think hurts your cause. I don't know that she's been that successful since Clueless, but if it hadn't happened in the last 4 or 5 years, as she's become a conservative and been a, I wouldn't say a prominent member of the Republican Party, but a mouthpiece for the Republican Party, and Stacey Dash isn't fooling me. You can go Candace Owens, your ass, if you want, but you're not fooling me. Sean, you may not know this, and maybe you do know this, and maybe this is a sensitive topic for people, but I think I can get away with talking about it. How do I put this? Bated breath for Sean.
We could just talk about Texas OU.
Nah, yeah, you know what?
I don't want to run you, you know, I don't want to.
I am considering your point there.
We could just talk about what the Texas athletic director said on Paul Feinbaum instead of a potential landmine.
Yeah.
Not a landmine for you, though. I'm
going to say this.
I will be listening.
I'm going to say this. Your black conservative grift doesn't fool me, and we're going to move on. It's a grift. That's all I'm saying. It's a profitable one, but it's a grift. I know what you're doing, Stacey Dash. Ain't nobody putting you in movies anymore. You got to find another source of revenue, and now we'll move on. Just saying. You're not fooling me. Christo Conti, everyone. And I asked Sean during the break, is it Del Conte? Or Del Conte. And Sean, who covered a presser for him, his introductory presser goes, I don't know.
I mean, the introductory presser was
years ago now.
Like December of like 2017. So,
yeah.
Cut me a little slack here.
He's your guy, though.
I guess, but I it's mostly something you just see in writing, really.
It's true. But apparently he's a guy who was going to be far more vocal than I remember him ever being. And like I said, maybe just being in the Big 12, you get less attention and less eyes on you. But now his Longhorns are in the SEC, and people are going to want to talk to the new team in town. So he and Joe Castiglione, the Oklahoma AD, were talking with Paul Feinbaum. And the topic of rivalries came up. And OU and Texas has one of the bigger ones. And he compared it to the big ones in the SEC, and he did get a lot of people upset. But here's Christo Conti.
Have you been to the Red River Rivalry yet?
At the beginning of my career, I saw it.
It's ridiculous. It's the greatest thing ever. You may talk about the cocktail part of the Iron Bowl. It is nothing
I think
at the State Fair. Because you had 300,000 people.
I detected something there.
300,000 people outside. No, the Iron Bowl is awesome. Don't get me wrong. At night, it's great. Same with the cocktail party. But this game, nuts, too. You got to throw us a bone there, P-Dub. What's up, buddy?
Joe, the University of Texas is not even an official member yet of the SEC, and he's already throwing shade on the Iron Bowl party.
No.
You'll be fine because we're not even allowed to call it the cocktail party.
When your callers come in losing their mind, I was not throwing shade. What I was saying, it is an unbelievable environment.
Oh, man.
So you're already throwing a little sauce on it for no reason.
Like, you've given me a gift.
This is not right.
Oh, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Come on now.
All I was saying was it's an awesome game that you give. You know what you're talking about? It.
At the end, I found that funny. So, Christo Conti, letting everyone know, Texas and Oklahoma are here.
You're welcome, Paul Feinbaum.
Yeah.
Your holiday weekend just got extended because I imagine his phone lines have been full the last.
And I don't really think Christo Conti's wrong. Texas and Oklahoma line up with any other rivalry in the game. It's a giant deal every year. Certainly the success of the teams leading up to the game can influence the impact nationally, but it's a huge game. Auburn and Alabama, I would say, is just a regional rivalry that has become bigger because of the status of Alabama. Auburn jumps up every couple of years and challenges them, and they could have won last year if not for the Isaiah Bond play, and now Isaiah Bond's playing for Texas. But that thing, Auburn-Alabama, is only a thing when Auburn shows up, and they rarely do. Oklahoma and Texas, that game means a lot all the time. the Auburn-Alabama thing becomes something we talk about if Auburn puts up a fight. I don't go into that game thinking, oh, Auburn-Alabama one more time. I'm excited about that. That's appointment television, despite what CBS tried to make it, because you couldn't depend on Auburn for most years. A lot of the years, they were not competitive. People don't remember it because of the biggest moments, whether you go back all the way to Cam Newton when they were down big in Tuscaloosa and came back and won. We know about the kick six and all those things, but for the most part, that game's not competitive. There's nothing to it. Alabama walks in there. Maybe they get challenged in Jordan-Hare for a couple quarters. They usually find a way.
Yeah, it also forces you to answer, like, what defines what the greatest rivalry in the SEC or in college football is, because if you want to make a case that, no, Auburn and Alabama people, like the locals there, care
yes.
way more than the locals in Texas well, and you Oklahoma, would know. Maybe you might be able to. No one's committed felonies.
Herbicide?
Yes, no one's committed felonies as a result of what happened in the. Actually,
that's probably not true. But
also, where like the Cotton Bowl's not exactly in a great part of Dallas, mm-hmm. so there's probably some felonies that happen in the parking lot, no matter what. Mm-hmm. But that has nothing to do with.
Felonies aren't getting national attention on.
I mean,
because of
they might
Harvey Updike.
They also might happen on October 12th, October 28th. November, July, there's always felonies happening over there.
Sure.
But is the greatness of a rivalry dictated by the participants in the rivalry, or does it have to appeal to the national audience, or at least the Southeastern Conference audience, if we're just limiting this to SEC rivalries?
Well, the rivalry has to appeal for the most part, to the people involved. Like, that's what makes it a rivalry.
So that's where the Iron Bowl, like, oh, well, they super care. Now, they don't really have a lot of other things to care about.
At least Auburn, certainly.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a, you know, you're kind of playing by different rules. And if you want to do that, then all of a sudden, like, Montana State or South Dakota State versus South Dakota becomes huge rivalries, because those matter a lot to those communities. It's just, how much do you want to narrow it to? It matters to this percentage of people, therefore it's important.
I think that's well said by you.
Thank you. Very diplomatic.
As always, Sean Mapes, politician in training. The Auburn-Alabama thing has gained national attention because of the remarkable moments.
Yeah.
And its passion can't be questioned. But does it hold a candle to Oklahoma, Texas? Yes, but I wouldn't just toss away Del Conte's statement. Oh, that's crazy. But, you know, SEC people will treat it a different way until they get a taste of it now that it's in their conference. But he is right in his depiction of that thing that happens in Dallas every year where Sean is alerting you to be aware.
Yeah, lock your car.
A felony might occur.
Just lock your car.
Yeah, all that State Fair stuff. What about the seedy underbelly of the OU-Texas rivalry?
It's the overbelly of that area of Dallas.
Okay.
Another thing that I think kind of hurts the Iron Bowl, or not another thing, just a thing, is that it's David and Goliath, at least the last 15 years. It's been David and Goliath. And honestly, for most of college football history, it's David and Goliath, where if we're opening this up to all of college football, or even just staying with the SEC, like Florida and Georgia, now it's David and Goliath, but for a lot of times it's two pretty equal programs, two equal teams taking the field.
And
Ohio State, I know they had a long streak against Michigan, but they're two equals.
Yeah, it never felt like Michigan. Now, there are individual seasons, and you mentioned it, that Michigan clearly was the opponent that was the underdog, but it never felt like they weren't playing on the same playing field. As far as at Michigan, if they got their business together, could rise up and challenge Ohio State. And we've seen that the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's Michigan and Ohio State as opposed to Michigan versus Michigan State.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a difference when it's two, like, top-level programs historically playing each other. And so that also helps. Where Auburn, listen, Cam Newton, awesome. Bo Jackson, awesome. Charles Barkley, yes, I'm naming a basketball player. Awesome.
Nick Marshall. For that year.
Chris Davis.
Awesome.
Sweet. Love it. Not exactly on the same level.
No. No. When Auburn wins, it's, for the most part, since I've been alive, an upset. There have been years, well, the Cam Newton year where it wasn't, but they, even then they were down by multiple scores, and Cam brought him back, part of the legend of Cam Newton for his 1 year at Auburn. So, and you mentioned the Georgia-Florida thing. When Florida had Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer, they dominated Georgia. That's one of the reasons they got rid of Mark Richt. Couldn't beat Florida. That's just how it goes. You don't beat your rival, even if you have really good years. It sticks in people. It sticks with people, and they take issue with it. John Cooper, you mentioned Ohio State, Michigan. He got fired because he could never beat him. And Jim Harbaugh was
Ryan Day, about to get fired.
Jim Harbaugh, because he was Harbaugh, survived the first couple years of not being able to beat Ohio State, and they turned it around. And now Ryan Day is the guy under fire for not being able to beat Michigan, never winning that national title, and having to watch Jim Harbaugh right off into the sunset. Now all the pressure's on him. That's why they spent so much money in NIL. So the rivalries go beyond even what we just watch on Saturdays. It's a thing for those communities that is year-round, and it determines the job status of coaches who are otherwise very successful. Texas and Oklahoma just add to what the SEC has, and it's part of the reason they added them to the conference.
SEC.
Are you going to chant that at any point?
No.
In a real way.
No, I'm not. I'm not a Mississippi State fan.
Yeah.
But honestly,
you're Texas. You don't need to chant a conference to prop yourself up.
The SEC chant is for the poorest of the SEC. It's the people that
go
3-9, but their pride is that, hey, at least we're going 3-9 in the SEC.
Or
enjoy that, South Carolina.
Or you're like Kentucky and you're hosting Louisville, your in-state rival. You beat them, or you're the road team. You beat them. You chant SEC in their stadium. That's what that's for. This is for the Kentuckys of the world. Yeah. Who are pretty good, but, you know, they're never going to win a national title for multiple reasons. So you lean into being in the SEC, and if you beat a non-SEC opponent in the bowl game, you start chanting it to establish dominance, as if anybody cares about what Kentucky does in a bowl game.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Auburn. Auburn does it.
Oh, yeah, they're one of those schools. Despite playing for a national title now over a decade ago and winning one, over a decade ago, too. Auburn's one of those schools who will chant SEC as if it means anything in the next 10 minutes after you chant. It means like something for those 2 minutes that you're doing.
It means you won the Outback Bowl. That's what it means. It means you beat a 9-3 Wisconsin.
You beat Wisconsin in the Outback Bowl. You can say SEC better than Big Ten. Meanwhile, you're still like the fifth or sixth best team in the conference. Doesn't change that for you.
Yeah, I think if you perennially finish beneath, fifth or sixth. If you're in the bottom half of the SEC, the SEC chant is for you. If you're in the top half, worry about winning championships.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I heard an Alabama crowd chant that at anyone.
No. I don't think Florida does it very much either.
No, well, they're now in the bottom half of the conference, so.
But they didn't do it either.
They don't do it because they have a history of winning. It speaks to two different SECs, and Texas and Oklahoma hope to be in that top half where they don't have to use the chant as a prop for
Oklahoma might.
Oh, okay, there it is, there it is. No one has much faith in Brent Venables, starting with Sean Mapes.
No, I have a lot of faith in him.
He exists.
I love
him. You don't really need faith. He does exist.
Yeah.
It's just that you know that maybe there's a cap on what Oklahoma.
Gotta
can
give
be.
Him like three more years.
That's real.
You don't want to fire guys too soon.
Yeah, that's real. Keep your guy in who will be average and will dominate energy right there. Yeah, keep him around. Don't be too hasty.
Yeah, don't change anything with your NIL.
Yeah. Hey, Texas, we were flipping through coaches for years now. Never worked out. You want some stability.
Don't be like us.
Yeah. Yeah. Stick with your guy. Give him that Stoops treatment. Keep him around forever.
Big Game Brent. That's what I call him.
No one's ever going to call him that. Ever. We got a couple more segments to go, but we're just way late, so we'll have a quick one when we come back. Maybe that's when we talk about Game 5 tonight. It won't be much, but we'll see if we think this one's going to 6 like Anthony Edwards does. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You
You're back inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea. I mean, you're not actually in the studio, but if you watch ESPN Houston's YouTube channel, it's kind of like you are. No, not really. Okay.
That's Michael Carroll. He's back. We'll talk to him tomorrow as the movie industry isn't doing great with Furiosa and The Fall Guy. You would call them flops despite the good reviews. So Michael might have told you to watch them, but maybe you guys didn't go to the theaters. You're going to wait for the ability to watch them at home.
Yeah, it's you. It's your guys' fault.
Yeah, if you are the ones who are ruining the movie
not
industry.
Enough you listened.
Yeah, Michael Carroll's telling you to watch these great movies. I think I'm going to go watch Furiosa at some point in the theaters. I better make it quick because the way it performed on its first weekend, they're going to pull that thing out.
It's going to be on Max in a couple weeks.
Yeah. It'll be on streaming really quickly. But everyone says, at least the people have watched it, watch it in the theater. It's a great experience. So I'll probably do that this weekend before I have to be relegated to the Max streaming service to see it. But a couple of things to get to before we get to the conference finals talk as the Wolves try to extend the series. We were talking about the intern not knowing that Bun B was someone beyond the Trillburgers guy. Well, Childish Altuve said George Foreman's another guy who people probably don't know was a boxer.
Yeah, with the grill.
Yeah, the George Foreman grill and Ice-T from David Whitlock. He's not just a Law & Order guy.
That one's funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
It's not like an acting career, really.
No, he got a role and said, you know what? I like doing this, and they want me around. I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, keeps the lights on.
Yeah, probably more than that. He started when it was a big deal to be on a network show. That was one of those shows, and I think that they still do it, right? That they go like, do they still do like 20-plus episodes of Law & Order a season?
I don't know if they still do 20. Hold on, I'll look it up.
Because I got into a warp of, I didn't really want to watch a thing to pay attention that I had to pay attention to. So, like, Paramount Plus I have on through Amazon, they keep recommending Fire Country to me, and it's a CBS show. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try it. Obviously, it's just basic network television. Maybe it'll be just entertaining enough to watch where I don't have to really lock in. I thought I was just going to get 13 episodes a season. It's 20-something episodes in the first season, and I made a mistake. I can't get through this relatively obvious storyline in 12 to 13 episodes. I got to watch over 20 of them before they complete the first season. Is Law & Order SVU still doing,
I think,
20-plus episodes?
The 2024 season was 13, or is 13.
Okay. Tell that to Fire Country. 20-plus episodes.
They're also on season 25.
Yeah, how many more storylines? Do you need 20-plus episodes in season 25?
They also have the pull to be like, you know what, no. We're not doing that.
Yeah, like Mariska Hargitay can leave and come back. She, you know, I'll take a couple seasons off, and everyone's like, Mariska Hargitay is back. Or Olivia, what's her last name? Benson. Olivia Benson's back.
Yeah, no, I think Dick Wolf has enough pull to be like, no, only 13 this time.
That feels like a fake name. I know it's his real
name.
I know. But that sounds
the first thing you see right after.
Yeah, every time. I'm not questioning you, but the name itself sounds like something someone makes up because their real name isn't great.
and they chose. Okay. Is it Bart Simpson that's choosing it?
It be more like Nelson from The Simpsons. Yeah, his name is Dick Wolf. I know that. Richard Anthony Wolf, actually.
To be honest, when I looked up Law & Order SVU to see how many episodes they still do, I just saw creator Dick Wolf, and I was like, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he's created all the Law & Orders, and he's responsible for a lot of NBC stuff, like the Chicago Med, Chicago Justice, even the FBI shows on CBS. Like, how much money is Dick Wolf worth? He's behind all
so
those
much.
Shows.
By the way, this, I have it up on Wikipedia. This is the first year where they're under 20. Since, I guess, well, 2020, they had 16. But every other year, it's 22, 24, 23. So they are one of those programs that just pump out 20 episodes a year.
Grandfathered in from the time where network television was doing
that. A relic from a different era.
Yeah, still getting people to watch. Credit to Dick Wolf. He's got all the Chicago shows on NBC, the FBI shows on CBS, and the Law & Order. So at least all Law and Order SVU. So if you are in the Richard Anthony Wolf business, it's a good business.
According to CelebrityNetWorth.com, the only source to find Dick Wolf's net worth, $1 billion.
Ooh. He's with a B. And he writes books, too. And he's been married 3 times. So a little less than a billion is probably in the bank account. But he's going to be just fine.
Come on.
What? That money's got to go to them.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, I don't know if Dick Wolf wants you to bring up his divorces. He's just a man trying to look for love. Dick Wolf.
He's been fairly consistent. They're in the 13-year range, and after that, that's when it ends. If you look at all his marriages, they end at – actually, I take that back. With Christine Marburg is, that one went 22. So Dick Wolf did have a two-decade marriage, wow. A couple of other 13-year marriages.
He's 77 years old, so that means his most recent marriage
– ended in 2019 when he was 74. Oh, no, what am I doing? 72.
Wow.
That's the math on that.
Wow. So, yeah. SVU is the longest relationship he's had in his life.
Does he have one more in him? One more marriage in him?
I'd be let down if Dick Wolf didn't have one more in
him. Come on, Dick. You got enough. You got one more in him.
One more.
Yeah. You certainly got enough money to get through it if it doesn't work out.
You see what Mark Davis is doing? That could be you, Dick
Wolf.
That
wasn't Mark Davis. That was Joey Gallo's girl. That wasn't Mark Davis's girl. Joey Gallo's like, hey.
But people believed it.
Well.
It's possible, Dick Wolf. Don't let your dreams
trust
be dreams.
Me. No one thinks that Dick Wolf can't get another girl. That's not in question. The man has been prolific in marriage and in making TV shows,
in episodes of TV shows, because he's made like 500 of them.
Yeah, he's put in that work. But tonight we've got Wolves and
Mavs. Dick Wolf.
Yeah, speaking of Wolves. Do you think this gets to game 6? Do you think Micah Parsons will be getting his shoes from Anthony Edwards? Because that's what Anthony Edwards promised. They're coming back from game 6, and I'll give you some AE1 exclusives.
I'm not sure. I'll say that it does get to game 6 because I saw a stat that in all 4 games now of this series, the Wolves have led with 4.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They've had a lead late in every fourth quarter. And you could say, well, they blow it. No clutch gene. That's what you could say. Or you could say, this is just a very close series that if one or two things go differently, this could be 2-2 or 3-1 the other way. So I'm just going to say between home court and the still – you got to have it, desperation, that the Wolves will be playing with. And it's always a close game. Give me the Minnesota Timberwolves. Give me Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert.
I like
to come through in a big moment.
I like all the things you said up until that point.
Yeah,
I feel less confident.
When I said the sentence, give me the Minnesota Timberwolves, I was like, what am I doing?
Lean in Anthony Edwards,
give
I guess.
Give me Anthony Edwards. Yeah. Give me Chris Finch. Mike Anori.
And Jaden McDaniels.
Jaden McDaniels. Hey, they got Luka Doncic. We got Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah. And that particular stat you gave, the one about them leading in the fourth quarter, makes me think they are going to win game five. I'm not to the point where I think a game 7 could happen. Obviously, we're following the Celtics model.
Yeah, that's
from last
the biggest
year.
Hurdle is the game 6.
Yeah. Yes, and the Celtics, it took everything for them to get to that game. Derek White tip in the final half a second after they were blowing another big lead, something they've been able to not do this postseason, but last postseason. They were down 3-2 in that series against Miami, had a great game 6 until the last couple minutes, and they were on the verge of losing that one until the Derek White tip in. Obviously, they lose game 7 at home. So game 6 is the hurdle. I think they do win game 5 tonight. I think it's still a close game. Last game was the only game where the Ant Anthony and Karl Anthony Towns combination outplayed the Luka Kyrie combination. That has to happen again. I think it does. And when we're talking about a game 6, which is only unfortunate because it means the Celtics are continuing to sit there as this now becomes a a real dogfight. But hey, I'm in for good basketball. I think the Wolves use Game Four and take Game Five.
How much of this is subconsciously us being a little bit greedy and being like, give us one more night of basketball before the finals.
Before we have to wait till June 6th?
Yeah. Like, just give me one more. Give me one more, please.
You got one more in you, Wolves? I think they do. But, it's a little selfish because the Mavs can go on the road and win the game. They won game five in L.A., came home and won game six. So they have proven that when things, it looks like, are going against them. Because I think the Clippers won game 4-2 to tie the series, and then they went into the L.A. and won. Yeah. So they have proven they can bounce back and go win a road game. I just think some of the averages swing to, and some of the bounces swing to Minnesota's way. I think Anthony Edwards found a shot, which was great. He made some big shots in the fourth quarter. And that's a guy I don't want having any confidence. He was shooting the ball poorly, really, since he took a nasty fall late in the Denver series. And I don't know if it affected him, but he wasn't shooting the ball well. And that went away in game four. So I think he'll ride that. If Cat can stay on the floor, if he can avoid dumb fouls, because he shot the ball really well in game four, he just didn't play enough because of the dumbness of his fouls.
Actually, I just saw a tweet. Karl Towns already has two fouls tonight.
And he's going to pretend like he can't believe that he got called for these fouls when everyone can see that these are obvious dumb fouls that he's committed.
Right now he's in the Chipotle line with his arms out and his eyes broken.
Yeah. The problem for him was he did catch a cheap one that wasn't his, because apparently the NBA has decided the whole I'm going to pump fake and then lean in and draw a foul thing that Luka did, which they said they were getting rid of. They didn't. That's that. By the rule, at least by their emphasis, they were going to remove that and not give the offensive player the advantage. So I'm not going to blame Karl Anthony Towns for that one. But the other ones, those are just dumb Karl Anthony Towns fouls. He does that all the time. If he can avoid that and stay on the floor, and I think the Wolves win this one, and we're talking about a game six in Dallas. We're done for the day. Gallant and George up next. I'm sure they'll keep you updated. I like them how I'm programming their show. I'm sure they'll keep you updated on what happened in mini camps.
What should they start with?
I think they should start with the sound from minicamp.
Okay.
Bobby Slowick talked about Stephon Diggs. That's something they could get to. Why we didn't get to it? Because I didn't see it till the second.
I'll tell their producer they should start with that.
Hey, we're a team here. Guys, I got your first segment already out of the way. Besides that, when I'm not programming other shows, I'll just tell you they're coming up next. Gallant and George, then the Killer Bees. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.